Do you often find that you end up repeating the same negative patterns in your relationships? Today, we're going to talk about how you can get out of some of those repetitive patterns that can cause such frustrations in your relationships. If you'd like to find out more about how you can improve your relationship and have a more fulfilling relationship, head over to therelationshipmaze.com, where you can also do our free online conflict style quiz. Welcome to today's episode of The Relationship Maze. And today we're talking about those repetitive negative patterns that so often happen in any of our relationships.
And what do you have in mind here, Tom, in terms of repetitive negative patterns? What sort of immediately comes into your head?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this happens in all areas of life. So we're not just talking about personal relationships in terms of partners. This can be at work, it can be with friends, it can be in really every area of life. But so often I've seen with people that I've worked with, or kind of people that I know, where they end up in these patterns in relationships. For example, where one person feels they're constantly having to rescue the other person. So the other person, they see the other person as, you know, being very stuck and being very vulnerable, and they have to do everything they can to try and rescue this person. Whereas the other person it seems to be very much stuck in this position where they seem to be disempowered. They seem to feel that they have no choice. They have no way of getting out of this very stuck situation.
But arguably, that's not necessarily a negative position to find yourself in, is it? If you're always there for other people, if you're supportive, if you're helpful to others, what's so difficult with that?
Yeah, and thanks for asking me. And feel free to chip in with us. So, yeah, absolutely. So basically, I mean, I think that's the thing, is that having an attitude of generosity, of giving, can be a very positive thing. In fact, we know from positive psychology that, not just positive psychology, but just generally, we know that, you know, when we have that attitude of contribution, where we do altruistic things for other people, it can help us feel better about ourselves. In fact, it's often when we don't do that, it can have quite a negative impact on our self-image. However, the problem comes when we end up feeling that we need to do that in some way. And that can be for a variety of reasons. So I think one of the things, you know, even as you're listening to us talking, is thinking, are you somebody who feels that you need to rescue other people? You need to step in and say yes to everything that you're asked to do, for example, even if you don't really want to, you feel you have to. Yeah, it's like, do you feel that, you know, for some people, it might be feeling that need to be the hero to save the day, feeling that the other person can't cope on their own and you have to step in and do that for them. And I see this with all different types of roles in relationships, but also with people I've worked with in the past, and also people I know where, and, you know, a lot of people I know who work with clients who see this with parents and their children. Where essentially the parents feel they have to do everything for their child. And this maintains as the child goes through their 20s and 30s. And essentially, unfortunately, what often happens is we end up creating a child who is unable to look after themselves. And I think, you know, this can be really challenging where, you know, essentially, through this act of trying to look after somebody and doing what we think is caring and loving, we essentially disempower somebody. We leave them in a position where they don't know how to look after themselves.
Yeah, so what you're describing is the flip side, so to speak, of this caring role, of looking after people, of having this desire to be there for other people. It's driven by a have to rather than want to a lot of the time. I have to help others. If a request is being made of me, then I have to do it. I have to step in. And to the extent that sometimes it can tip into a form of self-denial almost, to the extent that you might have not so much time for yourself. You find yourself constantly preoccupied with other people's needs and and what's going on for them. So that's what we're talking about here, isn't it? It's when it kind of tips over into this this constant desire to step in for other people. Actually, sometimes even when it might not be needed, as you say, you know, when it's like when we're over, you know, when parents are over-parenting, when parents are disabling your children rather than enabling their children, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're essentially talking about is two parts of the drama triangle that we talked about probably about a year ago on our podcast. Mm-hmm. So Cartman's drama triangle, where we have the three different roles of the persecutor, the rescuer, and the victim. And here, you know, in particular, we're focusing today on the rescuer and the victim. And I think one of the things is noticing how this can become like a black hole in all of our relationships that kind of sucks us into this quite unhealthy way of relating. Mm. And the first thing is to notice when it's happening, because when we notice it happening, we can start to step out and not become this dynamic of this drama triangle. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you know, the rescuer, we can become a rescuer for different reasons. It could be we feel we should, we feel we have to. Often it's a sense of low self-worth that we feel I need to do this because then I get recognition, I get acknowledgement at some level, which is desperately what we feel we need. If, you know, if someone has low self-worth, this may be a way of trying to validate themselves. Mm-hmm. By stepping in and doing this, it's almost like trying to be seen as this person of worth, this sort of hero character that you know, maybe in terms of younger relationships, when somebody didn't receive that caring or acknowledgement when they were a younger child from parents or wherever it might be, there's that sense that they're desperately looking to be acknowledged. And so one way of doing this is with this dynamic of, you know, we try and kind of rescue the victim. Mm. But the problem is that the victim in the mode of victim is in the state of feeling that they're powerless, basically, that nothing they do can make a difference. Mm. So they'll often kind of blame the world, blame things out there, and, you know, just be totally stuck. Mm. And the unfortunate thing is as well is that they often don't really acknowledge the rescuer anyway, because they take it for granted after a while that this person does this for them. And again, you know, I've seen this in family relationships where the parent does so much for the child, and then it's never this sense of, well, they're looking for some sort of gratitude on the parent, and they never get it because this becomes an expectation. This is like, this is just what they do for them.
Yeah, I don't think it's even about gratitude. I think it's roles, family systems, isn't it? It's a role that children get cast into very early on in their families. And very often with somebody who is a typical rescuer, they very often are in this mediator role in the family. That's been the role that's been assigned to them, where they have to step in when mum and dad are arguing. They're there to kind of smooth things over in the family, to look after everyone, to look after the parents or to look after the siblings who might be distressed when there's conflict in the family. So it's that kind of role. They're very often also the scapegoat in the family, because if they don't do the mediation very well, then it's their fault, right? They haven't sorted the problem out. So there is an internal driver very often with somebody who's a rescuer, which goes back to very early family dynamics. And that's why it's so difficult to step out of this particular role. It needs to be brought into awareness, first of all, where this is coming from.
Yes, I mean, there's different levels. So again, it could be stepping in to mediate, but there are more extreme examples where, you know, for example, one of the parents was very sick when they were younger, and they ended up feeling they had to take total responsibility for the parent when really, you know, they had to become quite adulticized at an early age. And what we're really wanting is that love and affection, that sense of energy coming back from the parent, or the parent who is maybe a drug addict or kind of an alcoholic. And there's that sense feeling responsible and, you know, really doing all this, feeling somehow that, you know, everything they do is they feel totally responsible and have to kind of rescue the parents. So this can be really quite intense dynamics. And, you know, really, you know, part of what happens here as well is there's that sense that you always have to save, you always have to rescue and you can't let anybody do anything for you. So when I'm talking about that sort of gratitude, it's sort of, you know, ultimately, often the person wants to have that acknowledgement of themselves. They want their self-worth to be built up. Whether that's gratitude, whether it's seen as the hero in some metaphorical way, there is that sense they need that for their self-worth, but they don't get that. They don't receive that because the victim in some ways has been disenabled and left in a position where they're never going to acknowledge that because they feel so disempowered and stuck themselves.
Yeah, and just before we come on to the victim role, I think what's important is also, yes, there might be the kind of extreme scenarios that you just described about a very disorganized family, so to speak, where there's addiction, for example, where there are parents who are really struggling for all sorts of reasons. But it doesn't even have to be quite as dramatic as that. It could be a parent who is very anxious, for example. It could be a parent who's quite depressed or often struggling with low mood. That often are scenarios as well where the child is then forced to step forward and start to look after the parent. So there are all sorts of scenarios. It's just ultimately when a child kind of is forced into the role of becoming the caretaker for their parents. So they are then, yes, so the parent then, or there is a person who they identify as, well, maybe not necessarily as a victim, but as in need of help. And as you say, that can kind of give the impression to the child, the rescuer, the adult rescuer as well, that they are important. Yeah, there's an important role here.
Yeah, and in a transactional analysis way, which is, you know, where some of the drama triangle originated from, we see that the rescuer comes from this one-up position where they say that, you know, I have to help other people because they're not capable of helping themselves. And as a result, they often neglect their own needs. So there's all this kind of helping ultimately because, you know, there is this wanting to acknowledge that self-worth, but it can lead to burnout. So it can lead to kind of feeling really frustrated, real anger in some ways where they can actually find themselves in the persecutor role because they're fed up with doing all this stuff for other people and nobody ever doing anything for them. They can often use guilt to keep their victims dependent as well. So sometimes when they, you know, the victim seems to be coming out of that helpless state, they may actually make them feel guilty about some of the actions that they're taking. And also the rescuer will often feel guilty if they're not rescuing somebody. So it's a very tricky dynamic.
Yeah, so we have this person who's a rescuer. Then the other tricky role is to be in the victim role. That means where you feel that the world's out to get you, other people are out to get you. It's where you feel persecuted by others very often. And there's often a tendency of blaming others, to put the finger elsewhere and saying other people are responsible for my poor mental health at the moment, or for the fact that I'm not doing well, or for the fact that I'm not earning any money, or whatever it is that, you know, that the victim is struggling with. And it's a kind of a bit of a collapsed state on the one hand, a sense of, well, I can't, you know, I'm helpless here, I can't do anything. It can also be a slightly it can also mean that you're coming from a slightly more manipulative position as well, of maneuvering into other people into a position, rescuers into a position to sort things out for you.
Yeah, so they'll often look for a rescuer or maybe try and force somebody into that rescuer position because, you know, they feel that they're stuck. So they're coming from what would say is a one down position and I'm not okay, you're okay position. So again, like you said, they'll often see themselves as being victimized, oppressed, powerless and helpless and hopeless, denying any responsibility for the negative circumstances that they experience themselves being in, and also denying any sense of power to change those circumstances. So, you know, this can be very tricky. And, you know, it is a difficult position. It's one of these difficult positions that, you know, as therapists, when we see somebody who's stuck in this position, It can take some time to help somebody get to that level where they see that actually maybe they can do something themselves about this situation.
Mm. Yeah, there's often this sense of not having any agency whatsoever. So there's often a sense of, well, I can't do anything about this here. I have no choices. There's nothing I can do. There are no steps I can take. I'll just need to sit here and wait for someone to come along and help me, or for the situation to somehow magically change. There's a bit of sometimes magical thinking attached to this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say my own experience, I've probably worked with more people who are stuck in a rescuer position than the victim position. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes the people stuck in that disempowered space maybe aren't always ready to come into therapy. I mean, sort of off, they may experience it more of depression, but certainly in my experience, I've found probably more people I've worked with, and lots of people do find themselves stuck in the rescuer position. I don't know in your experience.
I think it shifts all the time. I mean, and I know this just look, you know, for myself, I can be everything. I can be a victim, I can be a perpetrator, I can be a rescuer, and we're all in one day, you know? So I think these are very fluid positions very often in our lives. I mean, there might be one role that we identify more with than another. And classically, I would say, for example, a lot of therapists are probably rescuers. That's why they go into this profession, because they want to help other people. Or if you want to work, you know, if you work in a particular role like that, then you're more likely to identify with this position. But we can all be in any of these positions at any given time. So I don't know. I can't really say that I work more with rescuers than I work with victims or perpetrators. They can. Yeah. I think everyone is everything.
I think people do tend to have in a relationship that they're involved in. There tends to be a dynamic. There may be a different dynamic in different relationships. But they tend to often, we have these patterns that kind of reemerge in the relationships we have with certain people. And like you said, you know, as you have before, you know, I lecture on a course in counseling, and I think a lot of people, when they first become counselors, want to fix. Mm. It is that, like, need to help fix this person, save them, rescue. Mm. And I think this is the thing. This can lead to this problem dynamic, because as soon as we have that intention, we essentially create, or we try to create, this drama triangle. So in a way, we may unconsciously manipulate the other person into one of these roles. And sometimes we do it from a place where we, you know, from our mind, for example, from the rescuer, we feel that this is from a positive intention. I need to help this person. But by going in with this stance of I need to rescue, we subtly may start to put that person into that position of victim, where they're not able to help themselves. They need to have somebody else save them.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, working with couples, I can, of course, see that both partners are either very often victim or perpetrator, and it can switch quite easily. So, you know, both partners experience themselves as the victim very often. So there's a lot of finger pointing. There's often a lot of blaming. You do this to me. And because you do this to me, I feel like this. You make me feel like this is something I often hear from couples. And they can, you know, a victim can very often tip over into a perpetrator. It's a fine line. And I can see the switching between these two roles frequently, just even within one session. I can observe one client who, you know, moving from the victim to the perpetrator role and vice versa. So it's very fluid to some extent. It's about, I think mainly it's about bringing awareness to what position are you coming from here? Why are you feeling this way? You know, what is it, what's the underlying cause here that makes you feel like a victim? Or what is it that forces you, so to speak, to become a perpetrator in this particular dynamic?
Yeah, so like you said, you know, and we haven't talked about the persecutor, which is, you know, where we blame the other person. Again, we're from a one-up position, I'm okay, you're not okay. So, you know, that's another dynamic as well, which is particularly problematic. But I think, you know, the key thing here is, first of all, we need to step out of this drama triangle, be aware when we are starting, when we experience ourselves in any of these roles. Mm-hmm. And at this point, it's about thinking, how do we get out of this drama triangle? How do we, because it's not about like becoming, moving from victim to rescuer, right, or rescuer to persecutor. Right. It's actually, we need to step out of it. Mm-hmm. So I think it's noticing when we're having these responses. And the problem is we do tend to have these patterns of dynamics in our relationships very frequently. Mm-hmm. And we will tend, I believe, we do tend to have a preference for some of these modes. Mm. Like you said, they are fluid.
Yeah.
The rescuer is the sort of person that I've seen in many relationships feel they have to do things. And maybe at work, they have to say yes to everything. Mm. And then they'll often end up being a persecutor for a short period of time where they get really annoyed, thinking, why do I have to do everything? Why doesn't anybody help me? Mm. And which also is the victim. So it kind of moves between that.
Yeah.
But it's first of all, recognizing where we are in this. So I think looking at your relationships and noticing, do you have common feelings that come up for you for feeling helpless, feeling the need to constantly rescue or to save the other person or to always say yes? Do we experience that we often tend to blame? Mm. And what will happen, and the challenge here, is that we have that immediate reaction, because this way of reacting, this pattern, becomes almost automatic in relationships that we've had for some time. They've become so established. Mm. So it's noticing that reaction in yourself and then pausing before you respond, to respond in a different way. And I think, you know, this one of the keys here, I think, or one really important thing, is partly being able to kind of regulate some of that emotional response. Because as soon as we get caught up in the emotion, whether that's a feeling of guilt, whether it's a feeling of anger, whether it's a feeling of despair, then we find that we get stuck in one of these roles more easily. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also really important to always understand, particularly in relationships, that it's a dynamic. Always, you know, as a couples therapist, I'm always interested in what's the system here? So if partner A does this, what does partner B do? And if partner B does this, what does partner A do in response to that? So they're constantly in interaction with each other and keep very often this drama triangle alive in that way. So it's not so easy. It's not so easy to step out of it or to create some space around this. When you are in the grip of an argument, for example, there might not be the time to think, oh, what am I? Why am I feeling like this, etc. So that might be something that might come after the argument as a piece of reflection, and something that you can pick up later on again with your partner about what happened here. Why, you know, why did we both step into these particular roles here? Particularly if this is something that you do again and again and again, why are you doing this? So again, it's this sort of, it's the awareness raising around it that really matters.
Yeah, and I mean awareness of the fact that you are doing it. I mean, sometimes you may not know fully why. You might have to have, you know, quite a lot of personal therapy to tap into that. Mm. But being aware that you are doing this, and I think what's really important is to know that wherever you are in this drama triangle, you play a role in it. It's like it's equal. You're both playing 50. If it's with another person, you're 50% responsible.
Of course.
Or you could say you're both 100% responsible for your own responses. So because the tendency as well is in the victim mode, you know, blaming, or the persecutor as well. Well, you know, it's not my fault, it's the other person. But actually, we play a part in this. As rescuer, we can create a victim. As persecutor, we can create a victim. And as victim, we can create the rescuer or the persecutor. And I think that's really key, is to know that actually it's not up for the other person to change their reactions and their responses.
Yeah.
It's up to both people. Yeah. And actually, by changing your response, you can change the relationship of the other person as well. Mm-hmm. So by moving out of the rescuer mode and stop constantly having to save the people around you, helping them to realize that they need to kind of stand on their own 2 feet and that they can do that, you help enabling them.
Yeah,
exactly. And sometimes that's very challenging to do. And this comes into something which is called the winner's triangle. Mm-hmm. And the winner's triangle was created by someone called A.C. Choi in 1990, again from transactional analysis. Whether to say that to get out of that drama triangle, the rescuer needs to essentially find a sense of caring, a sense of being responsible and caring, but not having to fix. Mm-hmm. So it's empathic listening, like we do mm-hmm. as counselors.
Mm-hmm.
So listening, being aware of the challenges, maybe the victim's in, but not having to fix it, just being there,
mm-hmm.
allowing mm-hmm. them to realize that they have the empowerment to get out of there.
Mm-hmm.
The persecutor needs to work on being assertive, but not in an aggressive or blaming way. Again, realizing that it's not everybody's fault, but they need putting boundaries and being clear about what they will do, what they won't do. And if the other person responds in a way that they're not expecting, that's their choice. But being assertive and clear about the boundaries. And as soon as anger or aggression gets in, we may put somebody into the victim mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being able to kind of regulate some of that emotional response. Whereas the victim needs to realize that essentially being vulnerable is okay, and actually acknowledge the vulnerability and also acknowledge that they can have choice.
Mm-hmm.
That essentially they are able to make decisions. They're able to do things that can affect the situation that they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So these kind of three different dynamics that essentially can be some of the ways to help get out of that victim, that drama triangle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's a really useful model to identify also what are the dynamics here? Where are we at this point in time? If we just look at these three positions, it helps you, doesn't it, to identify where you both are, what you're playing out, and what might have to be shifted here in this particular disagreement that you have, or particular pattern that you always get into as a couple. Or it, as you say, as you said at the beginning, Tom, it's not just about relationships. This is like relationships in the wider sense. It could be relationships with friends. It could be relationships at work. So it's just noticing what is the dynamic that plays out here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we've covered quite a lot in this podcast. So if we wrap this up today, we might pick up on some of these points at another time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's realizing that, noticing when these patterns pop up in your relationships or in relationships around you, and notice when you notice it, that's the time that you can do something about it, because you can change your relationships. And it's not up to the other person, it's up to both of you.
Mm.
And in fact, by changing your role in it, you will affect the other person's role as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's interdependent positions, that's right. And it's a system again. So if you step out, if one of you changes, then it will affect the system as a whole.
Yeah, excellent. Great, so thanks for tuning in today. And please tune into next week's podcast. And also head over to therelationshipmaze.com. Thanks for listening.
Take good care. Until next week. Bye.
Bye.